So, for the last time, if you want to lead on.
Well, it's an unusual position to sit up here now, having been told basically what I'm going to say. I'm afraid that the speaker is going to be a little bit disappointed. I thank him, in fact, for saving me the time and bother to explain the appalling history of the Labour Party. That saved at least 5 minutes from what I planned to say. So I'll get on with what I intended to say in the first place. What surprises me through all the discussion, through the speech we've had so far, has been the mention of socialism. As was said at the beginning, we're talking about socialism, the way forward. And what basically we've heard is a basic explanation of what Marx described as a fundamental basis for a socialist society. We've talked about ideas like need not profit, we've talked about working class solidarity, we've talked about transforming the property relations, taking the ownership and control and transferring that to the community and so on and so forth, under the conscious control of the community, by people, by the working class, the workers who are ready to do that and who know what they're doing. But nowhere have we actually heard anything said about how we're actually going to do that, and how we're actually going to plan a way forward for socialism. Now, I'll come out first and explain basically what my position is, where I stand within the Labour Party, what I'm doing in the Labour Party as a serious revolutionary, and then take it on beyond that to explain basically what the politics of that involve. I'm a supporter of the socialist organiser tendency within the Labour Party. The socialist organiser tendency is something that grew out of a socialist campaign for a Labour victory at the last election. I'll go on to explain a bit further about that later. The socialist organiser isn't a hard democratic centrist revolutionary grouping. It's a broad grouping of people around the hard left within the Labour Party. That doesn't mean to say that anyone thinks there isn't a need for revolutionary organisation, but that's something different. I am self-confessedly a Trotskyist. I'm in the Labour Party, not undercover, and not saying that I'm not a Trotskyist. We're saying that quite openly, and we're coming out quite openly for what we consider and what they don't consider to be our socialist politics. Now, where do we start? As Marxists, we start with basically an analysis of the nature of society, the economy, the class relations, and so on and so forth. I'm sure I don't need to go out and explain that through again. And what basically we have to do is relate in the best way we possibly can within the class struggle, within the dips and troughs of the class struggle, the changing emphases, the various struggles that the working class are engaged in, to build and work within the working class to develop revolutionary consciousness and to develop a revolutionary class. So how basically do we actually do that? Well, first of all, we have to have, as was said, quite a precise analysis of what is going on. So, you can look at what's happening basically within the working class at the moment. You can look to what's happening in the recent disputes. There's a very special set of disputes that have taken place recently because for quite a long time we haven't seen a rash of disputes occurring that the rank and file have taken the leadership of, developed them like that, dragged the bureaucracy along behind them, and actually had total control over that. We've seen it again in Cowley, we've seen it with the Welsh miners, we've seen it in the steel, we've seen it in Halewood, and we've seen it in another number of other places. So what is the role of socialists in that kind of situation? Well, it's quite easy to sit idly by and say, we want socialism, we want an economy based on need, not profit, we want this, we want that, we want the other. Yeah, of course we want that, that goes without saying. I mean, we don't have to go out to the working class and say that, because our programme, our whole propaganda is always towards that. If you read a copy of the paper, it's stating that continually over and over again. That's never hidden. It's not a covert thing that we're hiding under. So what we do have to do is go in and alongside, working with the working class, we have to basically, while we're existing at the moment as we are, work to defend working class rights. We can't stand above, raise utopian demands about a socialist future sometime, somewhere that we aren't quite precisely sure when. We've got to actually fight now to defend working class living standards, defend all the rights of the working class have won by their own action, not through the Labour Party in the main, but by their own action through the years. So what kind of things are we talking about at the moment? So, when we're talking about this situation we have in Cowley at the moment, one of the things we're basically fighting are for conditions within the factory. We've seen a long string of things being pushed through against the workforce's wishes, which has culminated in what has been called the washing up time dispute, but basically the production line has been speeded and speeded until working there is intolerable. We can't, when we get to a situation like that in BL, say, yeah, come and join the Socialist Party of Great Britain and work to a socialist future. Because the immediate task in hand, the immediate struggle in hand, is fighting within that dispute to defend those rights. And this is what the socialist organiser comrades have been doing within the Cowley Works, within BL, and we relate to it in different ways in different disputes. How exactly do you go about doing this? Well, as a Trotskyist, I'm a supporter of what we and what Trotsky's movement has developed in the years since the death of Trotsky and the demise of the Fourth International, something that we call the transitional programme. Now, this gives us a clear way of relating in and keying into the needs of the class struggle. We've seen the old differences within the social democratic movement, where they would raise minimum demands, reforms in the meantime, and hold up the banner of socialism, the maximum programme in the long time. And what the SPGB seem to be arguing is social democracy, but without the minimum demands in the near term. What they're doing is offering this socialist utopia in the future that you can actually achieve if you join our party, nothing else, and forgetting about what's happening in the medium term. Now, we don't say, yes, we just want to get a few reformist demands through. We raise transitional demands, and we fight to win these demands. And we set the demands up, not so that there's something you achieve, that's the end of it, but so they draw on the struggle, they draw on the logic of the struggle, you bring that on, and you develop that on so that the class struggle, so that the conflict develops a stage further, people's political consciousness develops further through that, and we get to a stage where we can build from that to link things together. So look, I'll give you a practical example of how you do that. One recent example we've had, again, in which socialist organiser played quite an important role, was the health workers dispute last year. Socialist organiser, the socialist organiser comrades who actually work in the health service, launched a campaign called Health Workers for the Full Pay. It was a rank and file organisation comprising people within the health service, as I've said. It was fought for, it won the actual position at UP conference for all-out strike, it worked within all the unions in that strike to win these demands. The basic demand you're talking about, that was spoken about at the time, was all out for the full claim. The union bureaucracy wasn't sure about doing this, they wouldn't call everyone out for the campaign. We managed to mobilise a large number, a huge number of working class people around that slogan, around that demand. And that is where the fight started. Once that is won, you take it a step further. That's not just conceived as something you do, that's the end of it. It's built in so that the next stage of it develops along, develops a little bit further, and you start raising demands like a move towards a general strike. You do this through, and eventually you come to the sort of crowning demand of all, when you start talking in terms like workers' government, and you start talking towards having a government constituted by the workers through their own revolutionary action that is going to set in process the actual transformation of society from changing that to one of a capitalist society into turning that into a socialist society. The process works very, very similarly in a number of issues. One thing that I noticed again hasn't come out, we've heard no discussion about the specially oppressed groups within society. We've heard nothing about women, we've heard nothing about gays, we've heard nothing about blacks. Again, we take the same process when we're talking about these things. The women comrades within the organisation work and organise around a rank and file approach called Women's Fight Back. The idea of that being, you link women around fighting for women's rights in the various things, whether that be free abortion on demand, whether that be fighting for free, full nursery provision or whatever, you develop that and you're building towards trying to build some form of mass communist, mass socialist women's movement with a clear break from working class consciousness and a clear break towards socialist consciousness. The demands following through and building in that way. What we see on the other hand, what we see suggested on the other hand, doesn't in fact look towards the dynamics of the class struggle. We haven't heard any suggestion about how the Socialist Party of Great Britain are going to build themselves, apart from abstractly propagandising about how good an idea it would be to have a society based on need, not profit, about doing things like that. I've had discussions in the past with them. I want to take a couple of examples that I think quite clearly characterise and show the nature of the politics we're being offered. I'll go back first to talking about another group of the specially oppressed, the blacks within this country. I'll say what Socialist Organiser has continually done and is doing now in fighting within that. In the London area, there are a number of things going on at the moment. I'm not sure how much people will be aware, but there's a considerable fight going on re the Stoke Newington police. A young coloured kid called Colin Roach walked into Stoke Newington police station one night, was found dead, according to the police, with shotgun wounds. The police put it about that he was mentally unstable and that he committed suicide in the police station, and so on and so forth. The thing developed from there, the police slandered again, they had the parents of the kid in, they interrogated them and all sorts of things. We've basically got to a stage through the black community organising itself. They forced an inquiry into it, which has been supported by the Labour left and by the Socialist Organiser comrades in London. Similarly, we saw what happened with the Bradford 12, who organised to defend themselves against fascist attacks, and the police mounted a conspiracy campaign against them to try and get them arrested for doing that. Socialist Organiser fundamentally worked alongside those comrades, fundamentally worked alongside the Asian youth movement in Bradford, as it does in Sheffield and Manchester as well. And we're getting to the stage now, through the action of Socialist Organiser comrades in Britain, we're in a process where we can possibly build a national Asian youth movement and actually start to do some working within the black community, working with the black community, autonomously organising itself to build forward so that their voice is heard within society. We've unequivocally always stood against any attacks, any racism. We stood against the Labour Party's policy on immigration, on all the various levels of racism that go on within the Labour Party. I like to characterise that with what I understand the SPGB's approach to racism is, how they counteract racism and how they deal with fascism. And I think some of you who don't know about this are going to be quite surprised, because they have, on occasion, I understand, openly debated on the same platform with the National Front.
Yeah.
I think, as you quite see, if you're seriously thinking of mobilising black workers to work with you, to join your party, you have to quite seriously support the demands they autonomously raise. And if you go out and talk to black youth anywhere up and down the country, one thing they're going to say is, just like the Bradford 12 did, just like the Newham 8 are doing now, is that we want to defend ourselves against the NF. We're also, as Marxists, supposed to be historians. We know from the past what the role of the fascists are. They're the fundamental enemies of any socialist. They go around breaking up our meetings. They are involved in the institutionalised violence that has smashed, historically, the socialist movements across the world. And so what do the SPGB do? People who are basically our class enemies, who deliberately work against people who we're supposed to fight with and who we want to work with, what do? They go up on a platform alongside these self-confessed Nazis to debate with them. Now, they're going to argue that the reason you do this is because, you know, you've got to beat their ideas. And if that isn't a bourgeois liberal idea, then I don't know what is. We don't deal with the National Front by trying to change their ideas, by trying to convince them that we're right. We do it by working with the black community and defending the black community against their attacks and building up the working class so that they're able, when the fascist gangs are mobilised, as they have been done in the past, to defend ourselves against that. They also give some intellectual credence to these groups. A group that's supposedly socialist, supposedly contains people with an ability at debating, with fundamentally, they're supposed to have ideas that are going to liberate the working class. We give these Nazis the credence of saying, yeah, well, we think we've actually got something to debate with you. We think there's a point in debating with you because there's some actual reason, there's some basis for us to have an argument with you. And if you think about it, what possible basis can there be for us to have an argument and a debate with people who are fundamentally our class enemies? I think that quite clearly proves how ludicrous the stance is. Now, I'll move on to attack a couple of the things that have been made about the Labour Party. Peter Shaw was raised as an example. If people, if the comrades from the SPGB have been watching various television programmes and reading certain papers, they'll have seen the press witch hunt that has been taken against the socialist organiser comrades within Peter Shaw's constituency. Because one of the gains, one of the very few gains that the Labour left has achieved in the last few years, is being able to hold our MPs accountable to the constituency party. And what the socialist organiser comrades within Peter Shaw's constituency have been doing have been mobilising very hard to get him thrown out. And we've been picked up both on Channel 4 and within the national press on that example. So please don't try and say that we've got anything in favour of Peter Shaw, because we don't want anything to do with him whatsoever. Simply, when you talk about us organising towards a Labour election, as I said earlier, socialist organiser became the paper of the socialist campaign for the Labour victory at the last election. And similarly, this election, there's a similar campaign called Socialist for a Labour Victory. What these campaigns have continued to do is to work within the existing framework of what's happening at this election to raise socialist politics and to raise socialist demands around the Labour Party campaign. So, in the past, in the last election, we've talked about things like repeal of the Nationality Act, we've talked about troops out of Ireland, we've talked about free abortion on demand, things that in the main the Labour Party don't want anything to do with, and no more so now. Similarly, now we've got a Labour Party policy committed to, through conference policy, committed to unilateral nuclear disarmament, committed to free abortion on demand, committed to repealing the Tebbit Act, committed to doing something seriously to do away with immigration legislation, and so on and so forth. And we've no illusions about the Labour Party. We aren't in the Labour Party because we believe in a parliamentary road to socialism. We aren't in the Labour Party. We actually think the Labour Party can achieve socialism.
Well, some of us are.
Fair enough. You can have your questions. What we're in the Labour Party for is to work alongside what has basically been, over the past few years, one of the few ways, one of the mass ways that any form of politics and any form of working class action has been organised around and within, to develop and fight for those policies within the Labour Party, quite openly within the Labour Party, and to fight around the election campaigns, raising our politics, raising the things that we are fighting for. When they talk about, as the militant do, nationalising industry, you make it quite clear, and you draw out through the logic of the work you're doing, that you can't possibly just nationalise a few industries like that and expect, one, the ruling class to sit back and allow you to do it en masse, and two, that is ever going to do anything to fundamentally change the class nature of society. Similarly, we fight against the alternative economic strategy. We draw out the logic of the alternative economic strategy, saying, if you want to make sure that there's decent hospital provision, if you want to do this, what we're talking about is not changing things, having a bit better worked out wealth tax, so there's more money to spend on these things, that we go out and we actually fundamentally work to build revolutionary consciousness within the working class. The Labour Party isn't going to achieve that. The Labour Party isn't going to achieve that in the conceivable future. What I'm convinced of more so is that the Socialist Party is far less near achieving that than even the Labour Party is. They've been working in the way they have been way back through this century. They've been inflexible through this century. They've done nothing but raise the same programme this century. And they've got possibly 300 members nationwide to prove it. Socialist Campaign for a Labour Victory consisted of about 20 or 30 people, a group of people from various different tendencies. It now consists nationwide of somewhere upwards of 600 members. It's not very many. It's not very big at all at the moment, but it's something that's growing. Just as the Labour left is growing, and just as the fight back against the traditional reactionary nature of the Labour Party and the Labour movement is growing. You can't ignore these developments. You can't ignore the way that things are going within the Labour movement and within the working class. You've got to have a clear, concrete analysis of what's going on, and you have to have a concrete, clear, and flexible approach to working within the working class and working within the struggles as they exist and as they take place now. Yeah. So basically, no, the way forward for socialism is not through the sectarian way of setting up a party that you consider to be fundamentally the only revolutionary party, the only fundamentally Marxist party. What you've got to do is the way the socialist organiser is working. You've got to be prepared to link up with those elements in the Labour Party who are prepared to work with you around limited demands. You've got to be able to prepare, you've got to be prepared to work in the campaigns that are set up by the working class organising themselves, whether that's in tenants' associations, whether that's in the black community, whether that's in the women's movement, whether that's in the peace movement or whatever. You've got to be flexible, you've got to look ahead. And the only way we're actually ever going to do something for socialism is by doing away with this idea that there's one tendency in Britain that has got the fundamental knowledge and that is fundamentally going to form some form of revolutionary party. And working with all the elements who possibly can build together to do that, to fight for socialism, fight openly for socialism, but not in a utopian, abstract way as others would have us believe.